It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. As always, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Cats won last night, got their first SEC victory, beating Texas A&M 85-74. We'll talk about that today with Chris Fisher of the Cat's Paws, John Hale of the Courier-Journal, Daryl Bird of the Cat's Paws as well. Our guest lineup always presented by Sleep Outfitters here on the show. You can interact via Twitter at Leach Report. Email, it's leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080 toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day, a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. John Calipari, a little frustrated after the game. Said he was exhausted having to drag his team along. And they got the win, and there were some good things, particularly the play of Tyler Herro and Ashton Hagans and Emmanuel Quickley. But Cal was unhappy that, quote, we had some guys that got outworked by the other team. That's never going to sit well with him. He said that they didn't have the desperation that they had against Louisville and North Carolina. He suggested in his post-game remarks that maybe it was the fear of losing and the challenge that they were facing that brought them together in those games. And they played so well. And then when that atmosphere is removed from the equation, they drift apart, if you will. And that's what he's looking to get fixed. They got out-rebounded for the second game in a row, only the fourth time this season. Allowed Texas A&M to shoot 48%, and A&M's not like a great offensive team. The game was seemingly in hand late in the first half when Kentucky got up 14, and then A&M went on a 7-0 run to cut a 14-point lead down to 7 early in the second half, and then just kept chipping away and finally got it down to 2 and quickly hit a big 3-pointer to open the lead back to 5. Herro followed with another 3, and that was pretty much it as far as the challenge from A&M. But it's early in January in the process, and really it's a script we've seen play out before, so I don't think it's anything you get too worried about. Cal will get it done. It's just the earlier it can happen, the better the seed they're going to get. And, they can't they play like they played last night. They'll lose games on the road that they shouldn't lose, and they'll go back on the road for 2 next week. So they got another game on Saturday to turn it up a bit before they go down to Georgia and Auburn next week. John Sundvold worked the game with Tom Hart on the SEC Network. On the TV side, our Chris LeBar caught up with Sundvold for some thoughts after the game.
Post Alabama, John, how do you think UK responded?
Obviously a slow start, and when you come off a loss, you're trying to do some things. But you know what? It's a good win. League wins are good wins, and I know Kentucky fans want bigger wins. A&M came in kind of wounded, and you thought, well, maybe it'll be an easy game. But Kentucky played great. I thought Hagans is a difference maker for the rest of the year. In the last month, he's been good. If Kentucky's defense is good, then we kind of know their offense can come to where it needs to be.
What is the ceiling for Hagans on the offensive end?
Well, Hagans is solid offensively. He doesn't have to score 20 points a night. What he has to do is get his guys involved, make free throws, which he did tonight, made a bunch of them, handle the basketball, not make mistakes, which is what he did tonight, be a leader of the team. And I think that emergence in the last month will continue. Now, can he get teammates to follow along? That's always a key.
Reed struggled a bit. P.J. struggled at times. Now, your thoughts there?
Well, it happens. Guys start forcing the issue. When you're Kentucky, you need to be a piece of the puzzle, not the biggest piece, just a piece. Do what you do. Every night's going to be different. Different guys will score 20 points each night. just be at peace. Don't beat yourself up that you're not the guy every night. Because at Kentucky, there's other guys, and you just got to make sure you win.
Lastly, Tennessee with a huge win tonight. Mississippi State is a very big favorite tonight. Your thoughts on the SEC?
Well, SEC's good, top to bottom, and the top teams are really good. Tennessee was down 10 early to Missouri, and then they just blew them up. And Tennessee's good. Mississippi State's good. But you know what? Kentucky will be right there. It'll be great battles. I think Tennessee's a favorite, but it's going to be a great race.
Thank you.
John Sundvold, after the game, Hero had 21 to lead Kentucky. It was his second 20-point game. Hagan's 18 was a new personal best. He also had five steals. And I was looking over the last, I think it's seven games, he's averaged just under 3.5 steals per game. If he had that number for the entire year, obviously, he's really been coming on in the last month and change. 3.4 steals per game leads the nation. So that just gives you an idea of what Ashton Hagans is doing in this last month. He is defending and stealing the ball anyway at a rate that would lead the nation if he had posted similar numbers in November. They were talking in the interview about Mississippi State. They actually lost at South Carolina last night, 87-82 in overtime. Alabama went on the road and lost to LSU 88-79, so that doesn't help Kentucky as far as the resume. Tennessee beat Missouri 87-63 on the road. Carolina wins at NC State 90-82. Cameron Johnson got hurt in that game. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We're heading to a break. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Locations, Hamburg, and in the Palomar Center. Thanks to all of you who helped out with their holiday food drive by donating items at Wild Eggs. Now go by and enjoy a great breakfast, brunch, or lunch with everything made from scratch at Wild Eggs. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Chris Fisher joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline to talk about Kentucky's win over Texas A&M, 85-74. So it's a win, Chris, but it sounded like Cal was as much exasperated as excited.
Yeah, definitely. You would have definitely liked to have seen Kentucky kind of keep their foot on the gas pedal for, you know, the full 40 minutes, but I think lapses like that are expected with such a young team, and I think you saw some of that last night. But at the same time, I think the margin of error in the SEC is so slim this season that, you know, you'll take a win any way you can get it, and it's extremely important to hold serve at home, and that's what they were able to do.
You make a good point about the league, because just look at South Carolina, team that I think everybody probably looked at coming into league play as one that probably most every other team is saying, oh, we'll win that one. And then South Carolina goes into Florida and wins, and then they are back home and they upset Mississippi State in overtime last night, so the Gamecocks are a surprising 2-0.
Yeah, there's no easy outs in the SEC this season, and you look at, you know, Kentucky's SEC schedule, you play, you know, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, and LSU, all of those teams twice. And I think, to me, the biggest thing that Kentucky has going for it this season is the chance to play in that Louisville regional in the NCAA tournament. And so for them to do that, I think they're going to have to, you know, be at or near the top of the SEC. I don't think, you know, the NCAA is going to put Kentucky and Tennessee or Kentucky and Auburn in that South region together. And so I think that's part of the reason. You look at the loss to Alabama. I think they had a very, very good chance to win that game. It didn't, you know, really play out that way. They didn't really, like John Calipari said, they didn't really deserve to win it. But every game on the SEC schedule this season is so important, and you can't let you can't allow one to get by you.
Yeah, I said yesterday that the loss to Alabama said more about that chance to play at the Yum Center than it did anything about Kentucky's long-term prospects. It was just a bad loss from a Selection Sunday standpoint more than anything else.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Kentucky would be really, really hard to beat, I think, given the chance to play in a Louisville regional. But like I said, they're not going to put, you know, two SEC teams in that South regional. So Kentucky's going to have to earn it. And so it's very, every win counts. And there's no easy outs in the SEC. It's going to be a super, super competitive schedule. And so as ugly as it was at times, the Texas A&M win was still important for sure.
I would think you'll have to win the league to get that opportunity, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. And the SEC didn't do Kentucky any favors with the unbalanced schedule. But at the same time, there's still a lot of opportunities for quality wins. But yeah, if you want to make it to Louisville, you're probably going to have to win the SEC. And I think Kentucky has a chance to do that. Obviously, Tennessee is looking very, very strong right now. I think they've won their first two SEC games by a combined 75 points or something like that. And so, but Kentucky will certainly have its chances to prove itself as the season goes along.
I just see a tweet from Jimmy Dykes responding to one of his followers about, I guess Jimmy said on the Vols Mizzou telecast last night that Tennessee could lose three or four in the conference, and the viewer was contesting that, and Jimmy thinks 14-4 will win the league. I think he could well be right. If somebody wins it with less than 14-4, I'd say it'd be Tennessee.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a lot of competitive balance right at the top of the SEC with Tennessee and Auburn, and potentially LSU. I think Kentucky is there. Mississippi State potentially, even though they lost to South Carolina last night. And so it's going to be a grind. It really is. I think this Kentucky team may be a little bit better equipped to handle a team like Tennessee this season, just because of their physicality. I think the same could be said for Auburn, just compared to last year's Kentucky team. This year's team, a lot more physical inside, can beat you up on the boards, can score on the interior, and so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
You know, we were talking a little bit about Selection Sunday. The thing that hurts Kentucky is the way the process plays out now, because with Kentucky being so young every year, typically Cal's got his team playing its best down the stretch. But when you're that young, you take a few hits early that maybe you wouldn't if you had more experience, like an Alabama loss, like a Seton Hall game, a couple of close ones that Kentucky could have won. And those get held against you, I think, probably more so than you get credit for how you're finishing, because they don't look at the last 10 anymore as one of their criteria, for example.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there's been some years where Kentucky had the, top-shelf talent to where they could win and learn at the same time, and that hasn't always been the case. And, certainly they'll be up against it with the SEC schedule this season. And I think it remains to be seen how they'll finish. And I think it's still so early in the year that you're still not exactly sure which Kentucky team you're going to see. I saw John Calipari say last night that he felt like his team kind of came together out of fear and kind of helped them win the Louisville and North Carolina games. But it's to be expected, like you said, with such a young team, coming out each night, how they're going to look, how they're going to play, how they're going to respond to road environments and things like that.
Chris, thank you. Thank you very much for
all
the
right
time.
Thanks.
Chris Fisher, CatsPaws.com, at Chris Fisher 24/7 on Twitter. Heading to a break, John Hale from the CJ when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Back into the show for this Wednesday. And to the Kentucky Branded Hotline we go to bring on John Hale from Courier-Journal.com. And you wrote for the site about Kentucky's bench play. Cal took special note of Jamal Baker, what he gave them in terms of just getting the ball moving when he came in off the bench. They got sparks from Richards and Montgomery early. Quickly was really good late. And Baker, John, has been a little bit of a surprise to fans, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so for sure. And basically in the way that he's contributing to. I mean, I think we all knew that he could shoot, and we've seen that at times, although his shooting percentage is not great, especially if you take away those two late ones he made in that second game he was in. But he's done so much other things. I mean, he's held his own on defense. He had a couple of really nice assists yesterday. He's helped the ball move around within the offense. And whenever Cal says those kind of things, it's always partially about the guy he's talking about and probably partially about somebody else who's not doing those things. And I think last night it was partially about Keldon Johnson not doing some of those things and struggling. But the good news is when Keldon has an off night, when Reed and PJ aren't at their best, as was the case yesterday, then guys like Baker can come in, guys like Nick Richards and E.J. Montgomery. I think they had all nine of their points in that very first run after they fell down 12-2 and took the lead. Emmanuel Quickley's hitting shots the last two games. When their bench is playing that well, you don't have to have all your starters play great every night, and you can still win games in this league, which is I think a positive sign for Kentucky.
Calipari often talks about defensive confidence and how you play defensively can fuel your performance at the other end. And this team at the moment sure looks like a good illustration of his point there with what Hagans is doing. And then on the other end, you mentioned Keldon. He's struggling a bit in these last couple of games, and he had some defensive issues early down at Alabama against Mac, and he ended up not playing well and kind of disappearing for a while, and then had a mostly subpar game last night. It sure seems like that can work. What Cal talks about can work both for you and against you.
Yeah, for sure. And we know what Keldon can do. I mean, he's probably the most talented guy on this team in terms of draft stock and just his rankings and what he can do on a game in, game out basis. We've seen him do it for three or four games in a row. That stretch of, I mean, he was clearly their best player. And they're not robots, they're not machines, as Cal likes to say, so they're going to have off nights. But I think that's definitely a case of one thing kind of leading to the other and him letting maybe his offense affect the rest of his game or vice versa, whatever it is. It was not clicking the last couple of nights, I think, on either side of the ball for Keldon.
And, this is an A&M team that was out-rebounded by every Power 5 opponent it's faced, plus Gonzaga. They'd just given up 17 offensive rebounds to Arkansas. And the Kentucky team that out-rebounded North Carolina by 10 gets out-rebounded by the Aggies. So that set of stats alone would drive you crazy if you're Calipari.
Yeah, and that the play of those post guys right now, I think, is probably not super concerning, because especially with Reed, Travis, we know what he's done for most of the season. He would have been their most consistent guy going into Alabama, but he's been off the last two games. PJ continues to be a guy who looks really dominant for stretches, like he was in the second half for 5 or 6 minutes yesterday, and disappears the other times. And then even guys like Nick and Montgomery, for what they did yesterday in that game, they only, I think, had 3 or 4 rebounds between the two of them. They've got to rebound the ball better than that from those positions. So one of those four guys needs to be in double figures, I think, most nights, and it just hasn't been the case recently.
We talk with John Hale from the Courier Journal. It's at @John_Hale_CJ on Twitter. We're coming up on the hard break here at the bottom of the hour, so we'll hold John over for one more segment. Daryl Bird coming up in the second half of the show as well. One interesting game on the schedule tonight for college basketball is Vanderbilt at Georgia. Not that it's a big game, but it's Kentucky's next opponent. And Vandy is going on the road. And as we saw with Mississippi State last night, when you go on the road in league play, it can be very difficult. So we'll see how Vandy looks tonight in advance of their trip to Rupp Arena on Saturday. Kind of get to a break. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
chat with John Hale of the Courier-Journal on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline after Kentucky defeats Texas A&M last night, 85-74 for its first SEC win. We were just talking before the break, John, about Kentucky's performance against the Aggies. Previously, I was sharing a tweet that I saw from Jimmy Dykes, who thought 14-4 might win the league. I would say that that would probably be a number Kentucky, if they get to 14-4, that I would think would be a good target to shoot for. I think that could well win the league. If it's better than that, I would say probably Tennessee would be the most likely team to get it, right?
Yeah, for sure. The way Tennessee's played the first two games of their schedule, I know obviously Georgia and Missouri are probably in that bottom tier of the SEC, but they've won those games, I think, by 70 points combined. And, you know, A&M's in that bottom tier, too, and we saw what happened to Kentucky at home, and maybe Alabama's just outside of that. So those games are not guarantees in this league, and to see what Tennessee did in those two games, I think they're clearly kind of the best team in the league right now, and everybody else is chasing them at this point. But things happen. We saw Mississippi State last night going on the road against the South Carolina team that would have been in that bottom tier, too. Most teams are going to drop a game here or there that you don't expect. And then it's going to come down to how that top tier of Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, Mississippi State all play each other. So, yeah, I think everybody's going to have two or three losses by the end of this. And if you can take care of business against the other top teams, then you got a shot if you end up in that, you know, 3-4 loss kind of range.
Good thing for Kentucky is that their two games with Tennessee don't start until the middle part of February.
Yeah, and by that point, it's going to be a different team. I mean, Kentucky's a different team than they were a month ago. Maybe they've backslid a little bit the last two games, but with Cal's teams, you generally see continued progress throughout the season as they get more comfortable, get more experience. So playing those two teams, Tennessee late helps. You know, having another week before you have to play Auburn helps. Having getting Mississippi State, I think, at the end of January helps. That's good for Kentucky that they've got a little bit of time still to figure things out.
I said back in early December, this is probably somewhere after the Greensboro game, that if you looked at the Kentucky players as companies, I'd be buying stock in Ashton Hagans and E.J. Montgomery. My Ashton Hagans stock has soared, but I think I'll hold on to my E.J. Montgomery stock, too. He showed a little flash last night.
Yeah, he's been the guy for me all year that I thought, if Kentucky's going to be really good, if they're going to be that team we thought they were coming into this, E.J. Montgomery's got to play a big role. And then, you know, he had kind of moved into that number three man in Cal's, you know, three-man post rotation. Then he kind of disappeared again, and Nick Richards took that back over. What we've seen the last couple of games, I think Cal has gone back to where he's just going to play all four of those guys in situations because he knows that both Nick Richards and Montgomery give them things they need off the bench. And E.J. just has athletic gifts that, you know, maybe nobody else on this team does, especially the post guys. What he can do, made two really nice offensive moves early in the game yesterday, blocked a couple shots. Most games he's pretty good at offensive rebounding. He was not last night. If he can do that, and physically he's a little limited just because of his size and going against bigger, older players, but if he can do that for 15 minutes in a game, you know, 20 minutes maybe as we get longer in the season, those are going to be really valuable minutes for Kentucky, and they need those, I think, for sure.
Tyler Hero playing, didn't shoot particularly well Saturday, but this is now, what, 3 out of the last 4 games where he's shot it pretty well. So he seems to be in a good spot and really scoring in ways other than just spotting up.
Yeah, that's important. When we talked to Kenny Payne, I think, before the Alabama game, and he basically said that there are all these people in Tyler's life that are so focused on the jump shot and whether his jump shot's falling. And, you know, he's got a shooting coach and his dad and the Kentucky coaches and friends and family and whoever else. But he's proven Kentucky's not really a place to come if you want to just be a jump shooter. You've got to do other things. You've got to be basketball players. And Tyler has more than proven that he's that guy. He's not just a jump shooter. He can get to the rim. He can have a mid-range game. He can some days he's the worst passer in basketball, as Cal says, or whatever. And other days he looks really good in terms of assists and steals and those things. And I think Tyler contributes in enough different ways where he's a guy, when his shot's not falling, you can still leave him out on the court because he does other things for this team.
P.J. Washington had a stretch where he was outstanding last night. Billy Kennedy, the A&M coach, talked about it after the game, that it was a stretch where they couldn't guard him. And I know Calipari would like to see those stretches more frequent and last longer. But I wonder if PJ, the last couple of games down in Alabama, he got a foul in the first minute of each half. He picked up a foul inside a minute and a half last night. I don't know if he can kind of consciously go into a game trying to avoid that, but that I would think might get him in a mindset of being a little overly cautious early when that happens.
Yeah, I think so. And this the technical and that little scrum wasn't mm-hmm. much of a scrum, but I think that sent him to the bench with a second foul in the first half. He's got to be cognizant of that. Whatever it is, PJ's got to figure out how to do that more often. I know that that's been the narrative about him, and it continues to be. But when he's in those stretches where he's dominant like he was last night, he looks like the best player on the floor by quite a bit. I thought he had found kind of a nice little groove in December where he was doing so many different things, even when he wasn't scoring 25 points, which we know he's capable of. But he was rebounding. He was blocking shots. He had the 8-assist game in there. That's what Kentucky needs him to do, but they cannot have him on the floor for, 5-10 minutes where you forget he's out there. He's just too good for that. He's got to figure out why, and maybe the fouling's part of that.
I mentioned on the show yesterday that Kentucky finished 12th in the final Associated Press poll. Later in the day yesterday, the final coaches poll came out. Kentucky was 11th in that, flipping spots with Central Florida versus the AP poll. And I wonder, do you think Kentucky will be ranked to start the season next year?
I would be surprised if they were, just because I think the narrative is going to be so much about what they lost. And obviously you lose Josh Allen, you lose Benny Snell, that's a starting point. But then you figure you lose your entire starting secondary, three or four other really key players on defense, two offensive line starters, including All-American. I can't imagine that nationally they're going to be able to overcome that just with the reputation of what Kentucky is. There was one early top 25 that came out yesterday, I think from The Athletic, had them at 17. They have the pieces to where I think they can definitely be ranked at some point next year, assuming Terry Wilson gets better, assuming the offense figures out a way to move the ball without Benny Snell. It's hard for me to imagine, though, that they're going to have enough hype nationally to be in that preseason poll.
John, thank you much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Tom.
That's John Hale from courier-journal.com. Joining us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline here on the Leach Report. We are heading to a break. Daryl Bird from the Cat's Paws coming up next.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Quarter before the top of the hour as we roll on with this Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. Joining us next on the Kentucky Branded Hotline is Daryl Bird from Cat's Paws. We'll start with basketball, Daryl. I was looking at there at one point last night when Ashton Hagans was doing his thing defensively and coming up with steals. And anytime a guy crosses over in front of him, he will pick the pocket. Mm-hmm. He'll sit back and like a defensive back, kind of bait a passer into making a pass. And if it's one of those flat angle cross court passes, he's getting it. And I was thinking back as I was watching it, I was thinking back to the Duke game, and I went back and I just look at the box score right now. I would be willing to make a sizable wager that one stat that would not be repeated if these two meet again is that Trey Jones had 7 assists and no turnovers as the Duke point guard in that game.
Wow, that's a fascinating stat, and you're absolutely right. He's fun to watch, and he's the only kid all the years I've been doing this, he's the only kid I have ever met who came through the AAU circuit, like they all do, whose father pulled him aside and said, "You're going to make your name in the AAU circuit playing defense. Forget points. You are going to make your name, your reputation on defense." And I was just floored because nobody plays defense in AAU. They're all, I got to get mine. I got to get my 40. I got to make my highlight reel shot. And Ashton just, he said, "I just decided it was going to be my calling card. I was going to be the best defensive player there." And it really shows, doesn't it?
It does, and he came out to talk with Mike on the radio show last night, and Mike was, we were talking about this during the broadcast too, Mike said, told Ashton he reminded him of Gary Payton, the guy they called the Glove for his defensive skills mm-hmm. in the NBA. I went a different direction. I said, for me, it's a combination of Rajon Rondo and Deion Sanders, because he plays basketball a lot like a cornerback.
He does. You're right. And it takes a you made a good point that people don't, I'm sure, anticipate or realize or appreciate how he's baiting them into doing what they're doing. And just like a defensive back will do. Yeah, your receiver's open. Oh, no, he's not. You know, Clemson was pretty good at it the other night on the first pick six. Your guy's open. No, wait a minute, maybe not. Here's a pick six. We're going the other way. And Ashton's doing the same thing, setting those kids up that they think they can make the move on this guy, and you can't do it. He's that quick.
You know, Cal was lamenting last night that some of his guys, let me pull up his quote because I wrote it down on my stat sheet. We had some guys that got outworked by the other team. I'm guessing that rarely is going to be said of Ashton.
No, that will not be said of Ashton. And it's probably about the only person that Cal didn't yell at last night. My spot on the floor taking photos is really close to the bench. And when he says in his postgame press conference, I'm exhausted, he's not lying. He is micromanaging to the point that it's just stunning to watch that when they come into offense, it's like not only we're running elbow, we're running this, it's like you go here, you go there, you get up, you move here. As the plays are unfolding, he's screaming what they're supposed to be doing. And you can decide whether you agree that's a good thing to be doing while the kids are trying to play. But that's what he's doing, and he's just all over everybody. And Reed Travis is not escaping it. Ashton probably did. I saw him smile once. Jamal Baker hit the three-pointer and got fouled. He loved that. And he smiled at the end of the game when he told Ashton to let the clock run out and just throw the ball high into the air so the time would run out. And they called it a shot clock violation anyway. And he was smiling, trying to explain to Ashton what he meant for him to do, which he did the right thing. I guess Cal just thought the time would expire. And obviously, it didn't matter, but it was one of the times he smiled, so that kind of stuck out to me.
It mattered to the folks who wagered, I'm sure. That'll become a bigger part of our lives, but I guess he'll have to, in that situation, just kind of feign a shot, and it comes up 20 feet short or something.
Throw it at the backboard.
Although they could still make all of the shot clock violation, I don't know, if nobody rebounds it. Sure. We're talking with Daryl Bird from catspaws.com. Talking a lot about what Ashton Hagans is doing, but Emmanuel Quickley, I thought, played really well last night as well. And I liked how it was a two-point game, and he came off a dribble handoff, and his guy went under the screen, so he just took the handoff, took a step back, and hit a huge three, and that was a very confident
huge
move
three,
for him.
I'm pretty impressed with how he has settled in to what his role is, and it's kind of like he's the shot maker, Cali's talk a lot about Quad A can score. Well, so can Emmanuel. And you got to realize, this kid was in high school last year. He's a freshman. I'm coming to mighty Kentucky. I'm going to be Kentucky's next point guard. And, oh, wait, Ashton Hagans reclassifies at the last minute. Now there's two point guards. And this one ends up winning the starting job. I mean, I'm 18. I could spiral into a big-time funk over something like that. And he was... struggled through a few games, but he's kind of emerged on the other side of like, okay, I'm going in, I'm going to score, I'm going to do all the things I'm supposed to do, and huge lift. It's impressive how he's had the maturity to handle what surely he did not anticipate was or envision would be his Kentucky career early on before Ashton decided to reclassify. And he's handled it very well.
What I see right now out of Kentucky and what I saw in particularly that game against Carolina up in Chicago makes me believe that this team's going to be just fine by March, and they're going to have a good shot to make a run. Some of it will depend on how the bracket plays out, et cetera. But you can understand why Cal is doing what you're talking about, how hard he is working this, because he knows that you take losses like Alabama, it can hurt you on Selection Sunday, and that seeding matters.
Yeah, we were talking last night before the game. Remember, a few years ago, Calipari was on a campaign that we've got to get the SEC better. We've got to make this a cool place to play, wherever all the kids want to come play in the SEC. I said, well, be careful what you wish for, because now you're not going to cakewalk through this thing.
15-3 or whatever and come out the other end, you're going to have tough battles every night, especially on the road. And you're right. There's a lot of road games you could see them losing if they're not careful, and they've got to get their act together. And I'm going to do some research later today because I'm convinced you can go back every year and you'll find roughly the same quotes from Cal this time of year. They're not empowered. I'm coaching too much. It's got to be their team, not my team. Blah, 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 on and on and on. But I would add that this one's a little more concerning for me at this point because they had not just that they played really well in the Bahamas, but that was a 10-day, month-long head start above a lot of other teams. When you give your team that much of a head start, they should be farther down the road than what they are right now. And this group just isn't for whatever reason. And I didn't expect it because of PJ being back and Nick being back and adding Reed Travis, that the veteran, it wouldn't be just five freshmen trying to figure out, you know, where they were supposed to go on campus the next day, much less play basketball.
Talking with Daryl Bird of the Cats. Pause.
Taking a little longer.
They have put out a commemorative edition of the magazine that highlights the accomplishments of Kentucky's 10-win football season. And I saw on Twitter yesterday, I was reading one of your stories about some comments you went back on from Mitch Barnhart when he was hiring Mark Stoops and beyond.
Yeah, I don't know what made me do it, but I thought it was fascinating to go back that Mitch took a really risky stance when the day he fired Joker, he said this team, these fans deserve a football team that will compete for the SEC and play on New Year's Day. I'm like, you're 2-10. What are you thinking saying that? And he didn't know, have a clue he was going to hire Mark Stoops at that point when he made that stance. And here we are 6 years later, they played for the SEC East title and they were playing on New Year's Day, just as he scripted that the fans deserved and he would make happen. Because if that had blown up on him, he may not be the AD, I don't think. If it had gone really south, it would have been a nightmare. And just it was fascinating to go back and look at what he said 6 years ago before Mark Stoops was even a thought.
So look for that at newsstands and bookstores. Can they? I assume they can order online too, right?
Yeah, CatsPawsYearbook.com is where you can order. It's 112 pages, a lot like our football yearbook we do at the beginning of the year. And we've never done a postseason football book. We've been around 43 years, and this is the first one. And, you know, need to say we're pretty fired up at our place about how it turned out and how it's going to look, and just to commemorate and celebrate a season that's happened three times in 103 years of football. Couldn't let
Daryl
that
Bird.
Pass by.
Thank you much.
All right, take care.
CatsPaws.com and at Daryl Bird on Twitter. We'll be right back to finish up this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Leagues of Lexington. Donato slice of Wildcat history this day in 96. Number 2 Kentucky defeated number 12 Mississippi State in Starkville 74-56. It was the highest ranked opponent that Kentucky had faced and beaten since its loss to John Calipari in UMass back in the second game of that season. And, of course, Mississippi State would go on to join Kentucky in the Final Four that year up at the Meadowlands. And a happy birthday to a former Wildcat, Terrence Jones. Keep Nerlens Noel in your prayers. He had a head injury last night in the NBA game, taken out on a stretcher. Chad Scott, one-time Kentucky player and assistant coach, he was hired by Louisville, but he's leaving just a few days later. Going to be the co-offensive coordinator for Neil Brown's new staff up at West Virginia. Going to do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow on the Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast.